roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to MMA Junkie Radio. I am Goz, and we are getting ready here to preview UFC 258. Gorgeous George just took off, and now we have a weird echo, but I just realized what that is. Sorry about that. And we're going to get going here pretty soon. There's Gorgeous George.
How's my mic, Goz?
It's good.
Okay. All right. I did a slight move right before the show started because I wanted to get it in the middle, and I think those little movements caused some static. So here we are on a Thursday, ready to start MMA Junkie Radio. We're going to talk about UFC 258. Takes place on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific for that pay-per-view. Of course, the prelims start way earlier, and Goz and I are going to host the watch-along on Saturday here on Sportscaster. So tune in. This is our page. Subscribe. Like it. Make sure that that you're already, you know, signed up so that you always get the notifications of when we're on. Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, and of course, select Saturdays throughout the year when we host these watch-alongs. Gilbert Burns challenges Kamaru Usman for the UFC welterweight title. That's your main event. We're going to duck in around 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday night. All right, on today's show, we'll talk about that card. John Morgan's also going to join us. He's one of the editors and our staff reporter here on MMA Junkie. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the latest news. Gina Carano out of her role in The Mandalorian. That's going to be a big topic. Nate Diaz talking about what he wants. He had an interview with ESPN. We'll talk a little bit about that. Any of the other news nuggets that are out there. Later on in the show, we'll talk to ONE Championship's youngest fighter, Victoria Lee, 16 years of age. Last September, signed with ONE Championship. She debuts on February 26th. Fists of Fury. So we'll talk to her later on in the show. So we'll be right back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Thursday, February 11th. John Morgan joining us next. All right, there he is, John Morgan. How you doing, my man?
Good. Caught me with a little sip of coffee there.
Hey, no problem. Let's get things started. You know, we should be starting off by talking about Burns and Usman. You know, the big main event, because it is fight week. The embedded's been dropping. We've seen the countdowns. Fighters are doing their media. I think now the focus is making weight. Instead, yesterday we get this bombshell that drops. Gina Carano out of her role in The Mandalorian due to some comments she made on social media. Everybody's been talking about it. I woke up to it. Hardcore MMA fans, casual MMA fans talking. React to that, John.
Yeah, it's a shame, right? I mean, we think about Gina Carano. I think you think about like one of the most beloved figures in MMA history. I mean, she was really, a pioneer in the women's game, and she was an absolute star of the sport, and she gave us some very, very memorable fights, and you know, obviously just was a central figure in the sport for quite a stretch. And, you know, to see it come to this is unfortunate. But, I do think it's a reality sometimes. I mean, the comments that she posted, you know, you can debate the merits of it and stand on one side or the other. But I think what you have to understand is just, I mean, comparisons to the Holocaust or, you know, genocide of any kind, they don't play very well in public society, man. And you know, having a debate or a discussion offline with somebody you know, or some type of conversation between friends, or even just between people that are trying to debate a topic is fine. But listen, man, I just don't think you should put things like that out there. And I know that people say, "Hey, free speech, free speech, free speech." You absolutely have free speech. But that doesn't mean that, that what you say doesn't have consequences. And you know, as an employer, you're not required to put up with that. So it's an unfortunate misstep. I think it's a, you know, it's a valuable lesson, I think, for people that we see quite often out there. It's a lesson that I would think people need to know by now. But, so, you know, social media is not always the greatest place to put stuff like this. You know what it immediately made me think of? You remember way back in the day, Miguel Torres? The post that he made on social media, it turns out, you know, it was a quote from a television show, but he provided no context or anything like that. And, you know, he had to suffer the consequences of it. So it's just unfortunate all the way around, to say the least.
Yeah. How about you, Goz? You got this last night. We've talked about it a little bit, but share with our audience what your thoughts have been here as you process them throughout the night.
I'm really concerned for her because when you think about it, it's not like this is something that just popped up. This cancel culture has kind of been around. And if you look at somebody within our sport, Pat Miletich, he kind of went through something very, very similar. So there were a lot of red flags telling people that these can be the consequences of your actions if you're not careful. If you're Pat Miletich, well, and you lose out with, you know, doing your stuff with LFA and all that. But if you're Gina Carano, do you know how hard it is to get into a Star Wars movie and how many people dream of having a role? Dude, it's most people's dream to just walk by in a stormtrooper outfit and go, hey, that was me in that outfit. She had a big role in The Mandalorian, and she was willing to give that up. That's what trips me out, is she, I have to imagine, knew the consequences. Just a couple of weeks ago, she was already in check. So there's that. And then don't forget, she's part of that Deadpool franchise, and that is Marvel, which is also owned by Disney. So you lose out on that too, I would imagine. This is huge for her career, and I just don't understand how, with all the warning signs that are happening today, and even within herself, she got checked a couple of weeks ago, for her to still do something like this, I feel like I don't want to feel bad for her because I feel like she got every opportunity.
But let me say something here, Goz, too. And you throw out that term cancel culture. And listen, I'm not necessarily up on all the latest trends and topics and conversations and bullet points and phrases that people use. But I hear that term cancel culture and I get it. But we're talking about the Holocaust. We're talking about genocide. Like, I don't think at any point it's really I'll tell you a kind of a funny, well, not funny, but a coincidence. I started watching this series on HBO Max called The History of Comedy. It's from several years ago. It was originally on CNN. And there was actually a show last night that I was watching that was talking about how you delicately tread around in comedy controversial topics. And you know, there does need to be comedy. But even the comedians that were on there were saying, you don't joke about the Holocaust. Like, you just can't. Like, that's something that there's no funny jokes to be made about it. And I know that she wasn't making a joke. She was making a comparison. But there's no comparison to genocide. And it's and obviously the Holocaust is the one that stands out. But there's been genocides of other cultures and other nationalities through years. There's nothing to compare it to. That should not come up, especially on social media, man. Social media does not allow you the context of building an entire case and making an entire conversation. I would still say that the comparison would be out of line anyway, but at least you have a little bit more context there to kind of lay out your case as to why you see similarities and that sort of thing. But you're right. I mean, especially if you're in the public eye, you have to realize, do you have freedom of speech? You absolutely have freedom of speech. That doesn't mean you're protected with your employment to say whatever you want. I mean, it's a silly example, but what I say, if you think you have freedom of speech in the workplace, go tell Simon Simano what a jackass you think he is. See how that works out. You know, you have the freedom of speech to say that, but he doesn't have to employ you anymore either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? There are a couple people in MMA that when they left MMA, a lot of people said, bad move. You should keep fighting. There's no place for us outside of mixed martial arts. Gina Carano was one of those people. She had an opportunity to sign with the UFC. Okay. She walked away from mixed martial arts, and a lot of people said, well, what are you going to do now? And I think she proved a lot of people wrong. She got pretty popular. She had some good roles within Hollywood. She even starred in one movie, I think, with Ewan McGregor. Granted, I don't think it did that well, but she still had big roles in movies. She's one. Brendan Schaub's another one, right? Oh, you're going to leave the UFC? Well, good luck with that. And he's been able to turn around. So to see somebody do that and then just completely destroy everything, it sucks, dude. It really does.
Yeah, yeah. You guys covered it perfectly. I just want to cover it from the three dudes who are fans of the sport, who root for the fighters to do well and perform and entertain because it's a beautiful sport. We always wish there were more fans, so we cover it and trying to get it as many people's, you know, in front of their eyeballs so they can read about it, in front, you know, so they can hear about it. We talk about it. And but one concern we've always had is what, you know, what's the future for some of them? She had a great future. And as three dudes just sitting around on some beer, man, if we're talking about it, I think the first thing, even before we get into like the political side and what's right and what's wrong and our rights and this and that, I think we just go, what was she doing? We know, what was she thinking? Like, seriously, like Ghost just laid it out. I mean, those are billion-dollar franchises. Marvel, the Star Wars, you know, I mean, she had it pretty nice there. And I just can't believe that she treaded against that line recently, and that still wasn't enough of a red flag. Let's not forget, folks, Hollywood is known to be predominantly run by a lot of powerful Jewish people. Not all, but a lot of them. And that's why my post was just, man, this social media post's probably a career ender, because I just don't know about second chances. Now these things follow you everywhere. It's once you put it out, it's there forever. You know, how do you walk that back? I don't know, especially when you have a history of saying controversial statements. I just, going back to like, was it a career decision, political statement of this or that or whatever? It was just a bad decision.
Well, I agree with you entirely, and I want to point out, I know you point out, there's, you know, lots of influential Jewish people. It just shouldn't matter. I'm just going to go back to that once again. It just shouldn't matter. You don't joke about genocide. You don't make comparisons to genocide. It's just not. It doesn't matter what industry you're in or what people are running that industry. It's just, there's no place for it in our society at any point. The Holocaust, genocide, are awful, awful, awful things. And to compare anything to it, it just, you can't do that. But you know, listen. If she were to come out and apologize a little bit, you know, is this going to go away? No, it'll stick with her. But I do believe she can come back, you know, if she's sincere about it, if she sincerely wants to, if she can sincerely say, hey, my bad. You know what I mean? I don't think I realized, you know, what I was saying and how much of an impact this would have on people and how hurtful this would be to people. I was trying to make a point. I overstepped my bounds, you know. Try to work on, you know, giving something to the cause to show that it's not just words. You know, I'm going to commit some of my time. I'm going to commit some of my financial resources to help educating others on this problem. There is a way back from this, but you have to be sincere about it, and you have to really want to do it. And I think that that's fair. I mean, I know, you know, goes throughout the cancel culture. I kind of hate hearing that, because it feels like she just fell victim to this crazy phase that we're in right now. No. From that point of time on, it's not okay to talk about this and compare it to something. It's just simply not. And I think there is a way back from it, but again, it's got to be sincere, and you got to want to do it, and you got to put in the effort.
You know, are correct.
The reason I bring it up, is what I mean is it's out there, and you know what's happening to everyone else. You know, so
yeah.
There's
so many
red flags out there that are.
But it's being misused. It's being misused. I think. Everything's falling under this cancel culture.
No. I'm just saying,
an ignorant statement, insensitive, deplorable statement that she made. So I don't know that everything falls into cancel culture, but everybody's running to say cancel culture.
No. I'm not saying it falls under cancel culture. I'm saying cancel culture's out there. So you know that people are saying things and they're getting destroyed for it. So she should know even better. Like, she should just know not to say it. But on top of that, there are a million red flags as to why you shouldn't, you know, that
100%. It goes. I get where you're coming from. I want to make sure I'm not coming at you by saying that, but I just want to make sure that people don't use that as an excuse. Yeah. You know what I mean? As you guys said, I hate when people throw that out there and just say, what are you going to do? This crazy cancel culture. No, you can just be wrong. You know what I mean? You can just be wrong, and it ain't got nothing to do with any culture that's out there right now. It's just you making a mistake.
It's the new fake news, you know, and it's honestly just throwing out cancel culture sounds ignorant as well. But I did want to say this, John, a slight pushback. Here's what I meant. You're right. It's wrong to begin with. So me saying, oh, by the way, it's run by predominantly Jewish people in Hollywood, that's just a joke that is said a lot, you know, when I listen to the podcast done by actors and comedians and all that. But here's what I meant too. I probably didn't phrase it right, is I think you're right, and you laid it out perfectly. Apologize sincerely and let your actions prove that you're serious by committing to learning more, you know, about what you said, donating money, but also your actions, I think, is what goes the furthest. However, what I was saying last night to Goz was, I don't know that she, maybe I'm wrong because I don't, I'm not really a Star Wars or Marvel fan, but what I'm saying is like a Julia Roberts or a Scarlett Johansson, Renee Zellweger, I'm wondering if they could make a comeback because of how great of an actresses they are, you know, and what they've achieved. Whereas I think Gina can be like, you get rid of her and I think someone else can step in. I don't know that she's, you know, lodged herself in as like, now what are we going to do? And I think she's very replaceable, I guess is what I'm trying to say in simple terms.
No, I think that's a completely fair point. And listen, we see it all the time in mixed martial arts, right? I mean, if Conor McGregor makes a mistake and does something wrong, is that the same as, you know, Mike Davis from, you know, Central Oregon, who just stepped in and fought his way? That dude's gone, you know what I mean? So you're absolutely, I mean, look, that happens everywhere, right? If you're the star, if you're the one generating the most money, if you're the one with the most attention, you might get a little bit more leeway. So what you're saying is a fair concern. You know, if she had a little more pull in the industry, with the industry being a little bit more willing to forgive her, you know, potentially. Yeah. And as you said, look, listen, I don't know the validity of it because I don't have a lot of, you know, Hollywood, you know, links or sources, but I did see some reports out there that, you know, even prior to this, they were considering an entire spinoff for her, right? A series that was based completely around her character, and that was already nixed before this happened. Now, again, I don't know the validity of that, but that if so, that just goes to show you what it had already cost her. And you're right. She may be viewed as a lot more replaceable part in the industry, you know, versus the way Conor McGregor would be looked at in the industry, for instance. But listen, that doesn't mean, you know, that it's impossible. And it doesn't mean that I don't think that she shouldn't try anyway. I mean, listen, her life is going to go on, even if it doesn't go on as part of the Star Wars franchise, even if it doesn't go on as an actress. You know what I mean? There's going to be other opportunities, I imagine, in life that this, as you said, will tag along and will come with her. And if she doesn't make an effort to walk this back and to learn from a mistake, because I'm sorry, I know there are people out there defending her. I just don't understand the defense of it. She made a mistake, and I'm not picking on Gina Carano. I love covering her career, man. I love being at her fights. I love interviewing her. So I'm not trying to pick on her. I just think she's a human that made a mistake here, and I think she needs to work on walking it back and work on bettering herself and improving herself. Otherwise, this is going to follow her wherever she goes in the next phase of life, whether that be as an actress or not.
Yep. Real quick, while we have you, Nate Diaz, he did an interview with ESPN. I went through about half of it, and I was like, I got to step away. I never came back to finish it up. But one thing I got from it was he's down to fight Charles Oliveira, and he's down to fight Dustin Poirier. But at 170, I think that's the sticking point right now, the biggest sticking point, because I think Oliveira, I'm sure, would love to fight Nate Diaz. And unless there's an extra zero on his check to do that, it sounded to me more than anything, he wanted a title shot. Dustin Poirier, I thought he wanted to be the undisputed champion because they asked him, could you retire right now after beating Conor McGregor? He goes, no, man, I really want to be undisputed champion. And he's been writing paid in full. So I'm like, well, maybe the financial side isn't, you know, in play as much as I think it is. But he seems to warm up to, sure, I guess fighting at my walk-around weight wouldn't be so bad. Maybe he saw an extra zero, which is disappointing because I love it when these athletes go for the gold. But what do you think about everything that went down with that interview? And what do you think will happen? Because we're all sitting on the edge of our seats wondering the future of 155 pounds.
Yeah, I'm so torn on this subject, right? Because for Dustin Poirier, man, I really want him to have an opportunity to fight for the undisputed title. I really, to be honest with you, I mean, I felt Khabib's retirement was sincere from the beginning, and I thought this fight with Conor McGregor, you know, in January, it should have been for the title. It didn't get done that way. You know, maybe they run it back and do it the second time for the title, which would be a little bit weird, but I really want him to fight for that because I heard that, you know, he said it, you know, I want to have one day where I'm the best in the world, you know, even if it's that and I retire, like, I want to say that I did that. I completed the journey and I want that for him. I feel like it would mean so much for him, you know, in his heart, for his family, to know that we stayed the course and we got all the way there. Not to mention, you know, later in life, as he continues to just philanthropic stuff and his business stuff. I mean, it's nice to say former champion and, you know, former interim champion. It just doesn't quite ring quite as solid. So I'd love to have him have that opportunity. However, at the same time, you know, if it turns out a fight with Oliveira, you know, it isn't as marketable as a fight with Diaz, which I hate to say it, but it's probably true. I mean, if it's headlining a pay-per-view, I'm sure the fight with Diaz does a lot more. And so, you know, if that gets him the money that helps him support his family, that helps him do those good things with the Good Fight Foundation, it's hard to argue with that as well. So, if, you know, while I want for him to have that title opportunity in his life, if he says to me, John Morgan, calm down, I'm making three times as much money to go fight Nate Diaz, and I say, go Diamond, go collect that paycheck, go get paid in full, you know. But I do hope that the path at some point does lead to a lightweight championship, undisputed title. Maybe if you take the fight with Diaz at 170, you're still the number one contender at 155, even if you lose. Maybe he's looking at it that way. I don't think the UFC would look at it that way, but it's a possibility. I will say, as much of a star as Nate Diaz is, and as much as I love to watch that guy fight, and as much as I know people will tune in, I don't think there's any way you could justify doing that for the lightweight title. I know he's talking about fighting at 170, but I think you got to write that right out of the equation. So, man, it's a little bit convoluted right now. To me, I think the right fight to make for the sport is Dustin Poirier versus Charles Oliveira for the undisputed UFC lightweight title. I think that's the one to make. I don't know if it's the one the UFC will make, because I don't know how many pay-per-view buys that would sell. And at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to do, right, is get you to plop down your $70. And Nate Diaz's name makes that happen a little bit more often, I think.
And, of course, this weekend we have UFC 258 right at the top. Gilbert Burns versus Kamaru Usman. Used to be teammates. Usman about a year ago when this was already starting to warm up. And marinate is a possible matchup. Move to Colorado. This is the second camp with Trevor Whitman, if I'm not mistaken. He's not with Sanford MMA. I don't think he's called it an official parting, but maybe you know more.
He is.
Is it?
Yeah, I talked to him. I talked to him yesterday, but I talked to him last week as well, because I asked him to kind of clarify on that. I was like, did you leave just for this camp? Like, would you go back? And he's like, nah, I was kind of already considering leaving anyway. Basically, what he said is, like, at this point in his career, he wants something a little bit more tailored around him versus, like, the super camp where you got 50 bodies. And he said he has all the respect in the world for Henry Hoove, but, you know, the coaches were gone because they got guys fighting every week, and he wants something more tailored around him. So according to him, he was probably going to leave even before this matchup came together, but they are definitely split at this point.
Well, both guys definitely know each other very well, and they know their strengths and weaknesses. At the end of the day, who gets his hand raised on Saturday, John?
Boy, I tell you what, I know the story is all around them being ex-teammates, but to me, what makes this fight so intriguing is the stylistic matchup. You know, Usman is so dominant in his grappling game, but when he goes against somebody with the jiu-jitsu, the level of Gilbert Burns, I mean, how does that change things? Is he going to feel comfortable in the clinch? I don't know. Is he going to feel comfortable taking it down and laying on top and you know, riding it out? I don't know. And Gilbert Burns also has some power as well, so he's dangerous on the feet. So to me, Gilbert Burns has all the tools he needs to win this fight. But, man, I feel like Kamaru Usman is one of the most unappreciated fighters in the game today. I know people just tend to not like the guy for whatever reason. The guy is an absolute dominant monster. Look at the people that he's been knocking off. I'm riding with Usman on this one, but I'm telling you right now, Burns to me is such a live underdog because of the style that he brings. We talk about styles, make fights, man. I think he has everything it takes to pull off this upset. So, yeah, the former teammate thing, you know, that's the storyline. That's what we're running with, and that's what gets people tuning in. But for me, this is all about the stylistic clash, and I'm so intrigued by this fight.
Definitely. In the co-main event, we have Alexa Grasso versus Macy Barber. Barber returning after a serious knee injury. It's been about a year. I think it was about a year ago that she fought Roxanne Modafferi, lost, and also got injured. Alexa Grasso debuted nicely at 125s. I still think she looks a little undersized, and I still keep thinking a hard loss, an ass whooping, is going to send her back to 115, but she seems to think, if anything, I'm starting to really fill in at 125. I'm ready to go. What are your thoughts on the co-main event?
Yeah, it's interesting because I hear where you're coming from with Alexa Grasso looking a little bit undersized at flyweight, and I think that as well. But, you know, she's part of this growing trend of people, right? They're just saying, man, this weight cutting is just not good, man. It wears me out. You know, she had some trouble a couple times, and man, she said, I'm moving up to flyweight, and she said she just feels so much healthier and so much better. And she does, man, her striking, how fun is she to watch, man? Her boxing is on point. And so I think she's dangerous. But listen, I think Macy Barber does pack a little bit more power. I think she's going to be a little bit stronger, as you said, because of that size difference. We'll see. I'm leaning towards Macy Barber here, but I got to say, Alexa Grasso is one of my favorite women to watch fight, man. Her boxing is so fun. And if she can stick and move and stay away and, you know, maybe put the pressure on early, you know, listen, is Macy Barber going to second guess herself a little bit? I mean, she had all the hype. She was the next big thing, right? And then she suffered this loss to Roxanne Modafferi. And, you know, it's funny, even talking with her yesterday, you know, she kind of mentioned how, well, I suffered this injury and that happened. And of course she did. I mean, you can't take away a major injury like that in a fight and say it didn't affect it. But I didn't hear her really address the loss. It was more about the injury. You know what I mean? And so that makes me wonder, you know, how many lessons did she take out of that? So, you know, if Alexa Grasso can put the pressure on early and get her in her own head a little bit, questioning like, oh man, here we go again. You know, maybe this could go downhill real quick for us. So I like Macy Barber in the comeback story here, but we'll see. I like Alexa Grasso's style. She's fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's a great breakdown. I think Barber's got that power. Kind of, she's a fighter, man. She just doesn't stop coming forward. but definitely not as technical as Grasso. However, on the ground, she is a terror. If she can get the fight down, that's the question. She has unconventional ways of getting the fight to the ground, not through traditional wrestling, but then you see she's working with Israel Martinez. I think I've seen a post with Ben Askren, so she hit it hard there. Then we'll see, because Alexa Grasso, I would argue that on the ground, I think she's a little too comfortable with staying there versus right. just getting up, you know? So it's going to be a chess match. We'll see. Hey, man, I know it's a busy week for you, and for us. So thanks for popping in here and hanging out. And if you want to catch more of John on social media, he's at MMA Junkie John, and then catch his podcast with Ken Hathaway, Cold Coffee, as we like to call him. It's the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan. Thanks, John, for the time.
Man. John, one last thing. Do you have time, John? One last question?
Of course I do. I was just going to say, this feels like old times, man. I'm loving this. This is what we used to do.
I know we talked about Gina Carano in the start and how she could maybe repair what happened, right? We've seen people like Mike Tyson, what happened to him, and he came back, and now he's everybody's sweetheart, right? But that took a lot of time. So my question to you is, could maybe a return to combat sports be something where they seem to be a little bit more lenient on some things that get said and all that? But I'm thinking, is BKFC going like this? You know, is Showtime had a relationship with her back in the day, and you got Bellator, but some of these companies are tied in, you know, the UFC's tied in to ESPN, they're Disney, but could a return to combat sports, even for a little bit, just to kind of put her face back out there, could that be a possibility, do you see?
Boy, I'm going to be honest. I hadn't even considered that until you brought it up. But as soon as you start talking about it, I think, whoa, that would be a heck of a way back. And yeah, would BKFC be, you know, rubbing their palms together saying, ooh, let us get in on some of that? Absolutely. Now, it's interesting because I know Gina has kind of a love-hate relationship with combat sports in general and what it takes and you know, just dealing with the whole process of it. I know she still enjoys training, and you know, you can see in the Star Wars, you know, the Mandalorian, she still got the moves in there. Those fight scenes, she was selling those fight scenes, man. She was good. So, you know what? It's funny. I hadn't thought about it. And, you know, I don't know that you could just, you know, never address the situation at hand and just go back to combat sports and it all goes away. But in terms of, yeah, I mean, would people be willing to tune in? Man, there's no question about it. This thing would sell on online pay-per-views or whatever. Like you said, BKFC, some other organization. Yeah. Yeah, I think she would be a success in it, if I'm being honest. And it would be interesting if she's wanting to do it. It'd be a heck of a way for her to put some money in the bank and maybe, you know, start just generating fan interest again.
She's 38. She still trains. And there are fight leagues where she can just go back to her roots, which is just striking. Like you guys mentioned, BKFC, Lion Fight, you know, no having to train jujitsu and wrestling and everything else. But MMA was her.
You said Lion Fight. Lion Fight's on Fight Pass right now. You telling me UFC Fight Pass wouldn't love to have a new Gina Carano fight to sell some subscriptions? Come on, man.
But again, UFC Fight Pass, UFC, ESPN, Disney. That's the problem. I hear what you're saying, but you're right. Lion Fight is on Fight Pass. I don't know, man. That's a tough one, guys, because of how I hate to say it, but you have these companies. Everybody has someone that they answer to, and they have to weigh, you know, how sincere you are about your apology and the statement that you made, and how bad you feel, and can they back you and fight back against those that are trying to, you know, not conduct business with you anymore. And what I find more than anything is most of the times it's easier for the company to just cut the subject loose. So we'll see.
I agree. I just never want to see a situation where somebody makes a mistake and we say, you know what, that person is banned from society forever. They can never participate in society again. Go in your house, close the door, don't ever talk to anybody again. You're stuck by yourself. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know it's tough sometimes. It doesn't necessarily mean that you get the exact same opportunity you had before, but time does heal wounds. And if you show, you know, that, hey, I realize I made a mistake, I think you should be able to get back to other opportunities and get back to, you know, to new ways. So I think that's the key thing in here. I'm not looking at Gina Carano and saying, write her off, I never want to hear from her again. I just want to hear that she says, my bad, I went a little too far. I was trying to make a point and I went too far.
Yeah. All right, my man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for stopping by. It was like old times. It was fun.
Anytime. That was a pleasure, guys.
All right. See you. All right. There is John Morgan. Soon we're going to be hearing from Victoria Lee. Goes, anything else you wanted to add? Because we're going to probably interview Victoria, and then I want to spend the rest of the time talking about UFC 258. Again, quick reminder, on Saturday, Goes and I will be hosting a watch-along. What is a watch-along? I'm sure some of you are wondering. Well, here on Sportscaster, we've done these for a while. UFC pay-per-views and some other big events, sometimes tied to being pay-per-view or you know, special one-of-a-kind. We've come in here and basically watch the fights along with y'all. So when Joe Rogan does it, it's called a fight companion. When we do it, it's called a watch along. So whether you order the pay-per-view or not, hang out with us. We got a chat room. You can chime in with us from time to time. Put the guys on mute. Listen to us or vice versa. Keep us on mute and just chat with other hardcore fans. Our feelings won't be hurt. But where it's really key is a lot of you, you know, you're just not able to grab all them pay-per-views. And instead of hitting refresh, you know, and trying to find out or bugging your buddy, just turn up the volume. We'll tell you everything, blow by blow, what's happening, what's unfolding on these huge events. And again, the headliner, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. Usman defending his UFC welterweight title.
And there's a little chat room there where people get in there and they ask questions. They chat amongst themselves. So it's really a good time. But I also want to bring up that tomorrow we are going to do a special show at 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. Pacific here on Sportscaster. It's going to be myself, George. We're going to have Dan Tom from MMA Junkie and Simon Head from MMA Junkie. They're going to join us as well. And we're going to preview the card, break it down a little bit, talk about some of the storylines going in, get everything all warmed up for Saturday. But it'll be a little special show. It'll be at 1 p.m. Pacific. If you've been watching here on the little ticker, we've been running that. And then, of course, on Saturday, the big show. So hopefully you can join us for both. It's going to be a fun time.
I promise you I will have a three-team parlay ready to go. And guess what, Goes? Last week I hit a five-teamer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hedge so or no the, hedge?
On that one was the one that finished off with Volkov. Yes, I did a little bit on Overeem. It wasn't that big. It was only because I think I had like four favorites and a dog maybe. But I'll tell you what it was. It was like 25 to win 380 or something. So I think I risked the 80 with another site just in case, and I pocketed 300 something gotcha. Like that. All right, our guest is ready to go. She'll step in. The audio will settle and equalize itself. Victoria Lee from ONE Championship. All right, on February 26th, ONE Championship has their Fist of Fury card that's coming up, and our guest, Victoria Lee, she's going to be making her debut against Sunisa Sarizan at 115 pounds. These are atom weights. What's going on, Victoria Lee? How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Actually, now that I think about it, you compete at 115, but you are an atom weight, right?
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to make sure because here in stateside, the organizations use 115 for strawweight, but because you guys have the natural hydration, you're regarded as an atom weight, but you'll compete at strawweight, which is honestly the safest way to go. But welcome to MMA Junkie Radio. I'm George. That's Goes. The Fighting Lee family from Hawaii, we're all about you guys, and you're the latest professional that they've added there over at ONE Championship from the Lee family. You signed as a 16-year-old. That just blows me away, honestly. That's amazing.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm so lucky to be able to compete, and I'm super excited for my debut in 2 weeks.
I mean, like, I'm thinking you should be, like, worried about, you know, the co-ed dance or maybe if you're part of the poetry club at school or what you're doing this weekend to hang out. Instead, you're going to be fighting, you know, and there's going to be millions that watch these fights, whether it's live or, you know, they're on some sort of a tape delay or whatever, but a lot of people are going to be tuning in to watch you compete as a professional athlete. Is it even a big deal to you, or did it help that your siblings kind of already laid the foundation, so it's just something that I guess is natural in your family?
Well, it's always been a dream of mine to compete for ONE Championship, and I was so lucky to have this opportunity presented to me, and I'm I'm just very excited about being able to travel and compete and do what I love at such a young age.
And are you still able to partake in some of those things I mentioned as a teenager? Like, you know, have you been able to compartmentalize professional athlete, still a young lady who's in school? Or is it like that where you're so focused that you've had to give up a lot?
Well, training has been a part of our daily routine. It's part of our lifestyle. We train every day. And I'm still able to do the things that I love and go to the beach and stuff. But right now, my primary focus is on my debut. And so that's what's going on right now.
Victoria, when we look at all the leads and we put you all together, is there one thing that you can point to that says, this is how Victoria stands out amongst the Lee family? Is there something different about you?
Well, I think that what makes me stand out is that I, all right, I just, I
say it. You're better than them. Say, I'm better than my sister and my brother.
No ways. I would get so beat up if I said that. But, I.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like, yeah, George and I, we're actually brothers. And the way we stand out, is a lot of people say, I'm always on time, he's not. Are there little things that separate you from there? Like, she's the first one in, last one out. Do you hate wrestling? The other ones love it. What's like that one thing that kind of makes you stand out over them?
Well, we all have a lot of similar, I would say,
well, we could skip that. We can come back to that if you think of it. All right. I did want to ask you, in your head, when you lay your head down on the pillow at night and you think about your ultimate dream, what you want to accomplish in life or in mixed martial arts, what's that little scenario that plays in your head?
Well, my overall goal is just to keep improving my skills and just become a better martial artist. But it's always been a dream of mine to one day compete in a fully packed live stadium for the belt.
Who's got the best walkout song out of the three of you?
Oh, I don't know. Both my brother and sister have really, really good walkout songs that always gets us super hyped when we hear it. So, I don't know.
Have you chosen yours yet?
Pardon?
Have you chosen yours yet?
Yes, I have chosen.
All right. Is it something you can share with us now?
Yeah, it's called Born Ready by Zayd Wolf.
All right. Go ahead, Goz. What were you gonna ask?
Is there a particular finish that you have always wanted to get, that by the time your career is over, you want to make sure I throw that flying knee or I get that head kick knockout? Is there any one particular that's the goal? Because we're going to interview you in 10 years and we're going to talk about it.
Well, I would say that one finish that I would love to get one day is a twister finish, because I've seen my sister pull that off, and it was just such an incredible, incredible thing that I would like to follow and do one day.
Are you a black belt in jiu-jitsu?
No, I'm a purple belt.
Purple belt. Okay. All right. And at what age did you first start training? Like, literally as a toddler, or did you come in like, you know, age 5? When did you really start, I guess, training and not just, oh, there's little Victoria, she's just playing around with one of the grappling dummies? I mean, like, serious training.
Well, we all started growing up training on the mats, but I would say that I started taking it seriously at around like age eight and nine. That's when I was able to get my first pancration experience in tournaments, and that's when I would say that we started to get a little more serious about training.
And aside from your siblings, who are some of the MMA athletes you enjoy watching?
Well, I look up to my siblings because they are the they're one of the most exciting fighters that I watch. But apart from them, I enjoy watching good strikers like Max and Valentina Shevchenko. Those are two fighters that I enjoy watching.
Man, you picked two killers. Those two are very exciting to watch. What Max did a few weeks ago was simply amazing. I mean, nonstop for 25 minutes. That was quite a pace. And then, of course, Valentina has just been spectacular for the last 5 years. So I liked your two choices. All right, last question. Who would be a dream celebrity for you to one way to wake up and they liked your beautiful KO finish or submission finish? You know, somebody that you would want to know that they're a fan of you.
I don't have like a certain celebrity that I idolize. I can't think of anybody right now. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's quite all right. But listen, what you're doing is phenomenal. At 16, I was worried about what kind of a burrito I was going to have for lunch, you know, or why I didn't study for social studies. And here you are, a professional athlete getting ready to compete. And we're covering you, and it's an honor to cover you and your family. You're with a quality organization, and I want to thank you for the time today, Victoria. Like Ghost said, not only will we be interviewing you in 10 years, hopefully we catch up with you throughout your career, before your fights, after your fights. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll see you. Bye-bye. All right, there you have it, folks. Victoria Lee, 16 years old, goes. What do you say to that?
I was trying to hold back my laughter because the poetry club and the co-ed dance. What are you, class of 1955?
Well, you know, I didn't want to mention what I was doing at that age, you know, sneaking around, skipping class, drinking beer. I mean, I wasn't going to say all that because she seems like a very, very young, fine young lady. But I mean, yeah, that's
got to be rough.
Amazing, man. It's amazing at 16 to go out there and do what, you know, a lot of these other athletes are doing.
I can't imagine. I'm trying to think, like, who else is a family that's just got a lot of like the Shevchenko sisters, right? But where can you find, other than the Gracies, obviously, where you can find three or four, even, like, to grow up in that environment? I wonder if there's ever just one that says, yeah, this isn't for me, I want to paint or something, you know?
Yeah, like, I can think of one. The two Ellenberger brothers have another brother. I think his name is Adam. And mm-hmm. Jake told me, you know, he was a tough kid too. They all fought, you know, and but I believe it wasn't for him the way it was for the others in terms of, like, you know, 20 some, 30 some fights. But the Penn brothers, Regan fought, BJ for sure fought, legendary career. I can't remember if JD fought. They all trained though. But I think JD was more like the business mind. And honestly, Reagan, I think, was more of the trainer, but he dabbled in fighting a little. The Machidas, mm-hmm. father, trainer, Lyoto, but we've seen a few of the other. Chinzen, I believe, is one of the guys' names, and I think there might even be another one. So there's a few that have just kind of kept their distance. You know, maybe they didn't have the skills, or maybe it just wasn't for them, but they all seem to have a role, and they all backed each other. But this family is very unified. All their training is done under the supervision of their father. They don't go
a lot of it at home.
Yeah, they don't go to any of the other gyms, and it's hard to argue with the success. The first two siblings have held belts, you know. But I didn't even want to put that kind of pressure on her at age 16. She's just debuting. She's debuting on a kickboxing card. By the way, Georgia Petrosian's on that card, one of the greatest kickboxers ever. So you definitely want to check out Fists of Fury on February 26th. We'll give you more reminders on that fight week. And then we want to thank ONE Championship for facilitating that interview. She's in Hawaii, so she had to wake up a little early to get this one done, to do it live with us.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ray Cooper does the same thing, right? He just trains at home. Wasn't that his thing? He's Hawaiian as well.
Uh-huh. Ray Cooper, yeah. A lot of it's done at home. He was a state wrestling champion, and the father fought. In fact, remember that storyline where the father lost to Jake Shields and Ray Cooper beat Jake Shields 18 years later, which shows you how long Jake Shields has been around. But yeah, the Cooper family, the Lee family, of course, the Gracies, the Millers were two brothers, or did they have a third? I can't remember. There's probably some other. I mean, the Huas, the Nogueras, but we want to go at least three, right? Because there's a lot of like tandems.
Yeah, there's a lot of twos. The Lozon brothers.
The Lozons, the Emelianenkos, the Overeems, Valentin Overeem fought.
Yeah. He beat Randy.
Did he really?
Didn't he? I think maybe. He beat Randy.
Maybe, yeah. The speaking of beating Randy, Ensign Inouye, his brother Egan.
Mm-hmm.
He fought, and I think, was he the professional racquetball player, Egan?
Ensign. Well, I think they both were.
But I think Egan was, like, toured.
I think Ensign did, too.
Hmm. I got to reach out to him. He's Ensign's a guy that I chat with from time to time. And you get 2-3 incoming texts, and you feel bad because you're like, oh, he's doing a better job to maintain contact than I am. So I got to hit him back with one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's some really cool people that we've met in the sport that I like keeping in contact with.
Doesn't you went through a
lighting up or nothing, but
didn't you go through a racquetball phase for a while?
Not to their level, but yeah, no. When we were younger, I was a member of Los Caballeros Racquet and Sports Club in Fountain Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I would play with my buddies, and we would slowly start to get good. But then you would see those weekend tournaments and you'd see how awesome those guys were. And you're like, oh man, I think I can get to something like this, but I won't be able to hoop it up with you guys on Friday night. I was in a Friday night league. You know, I won't be able to chill at the pool. I won't be able to hang out, you know, like that was their only thing, you know, and they would have big tournaments there. And then later on, when Squid had moved back from Vegas to SoCal, and it was around the time when we were all kind of still living in Santa Ana, we would hop the fence at the Aspens.
Mm-hmm.
And either one of us found out the code or somehow we knew how to get in, and we would play there. And again, we'd start off terrible, stumbling around, you know, just we hadn't played in a long time. Calves would be burning, feet muscles sore for days. And then about a week and a half, 2 weeks in, okay, you know, the shots were getting lower and lower and better, and strategies come into play, great rallies. It was an awesome workout. So, I went through a few phases.
Los Cab was awesome. They had the big pool, then they had the basketball gym, the racquetball courts, little cafe. I mean, that was kind of like our babysitter for a couple summers.
Man, maybe even longer. I still remember. Oh, I don't know why this makes... I still remember Woody's dad picking us up from Los Cab, and we're coming home down Segerstrom in Santa Ana. And we get to Rate, and Woody was 15, and I think he was doing behind the wheel. So we weren't even 16. We hadn't gotten our driver's licenses yet. And he was supposed to make a left to take us home, you know, on Rate.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, he just came to a complete stop right in the middle of the intersection.
He told the guy behind him to back up, remember?
He just froze. He didn't know what to do. And Woody's dad was intense, you know, Felix. May he rest in peace. And Felix just looks at him like, what the hell are you doing? You know, because by then, our green, which had gone to the yellow and now red phase, Woody had basically waited out the last possible car that can come. And now you can finish your turn even if it's on a red light because the other side's got green. They're ready to go. And he just froze. But again, his dad was just intimidating, you know, and his dad goes, what the hell are you doing? So rather than just go, he turns around and he tells the guy, yeah, like, back up, you know. And then that guy's like, I'm halfway in here. What am I going to do, you know? You go.
I remember you, Jerry Tarkanian, that you were biting the towel.
Yeah, because you didn't want to make him mad at you too, you know. You wanted to laugh with him, like, get him, Mr. Gonzalez, you know, get him, Mr. G or whatever. But you definitely didn't want it to turn on a dime and like, what the hell are you laughing at? You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
That was funny. I'm telling you, there's some things I could forget. Like if you said, what'd you have for lunch yesterday? I don't know. Forget.
I really don't know.
there's some things that stand out from childhood that I remember, like, you know, at least some scenes. And I think that one was one because I was just laughing my ass off. You know, well, he could probably tell you stories of when Dad scolded me and he was laughing his ass off.
I remember one time. Two things you guys got to remember. Tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific, here on Sportscaster, UFC 258. We're going to break down the card with Dan Tom, Simon Head, talk about the little storylines going in. And then don't forget our watch along, 6 p.m. Pacific, because we like to get in there early on Sportscaster. Watch this pay-per-view with us. We'll let you know what's going on.
Yep. Perfectly said. All right, this weekend is that UFC 258 card headlined by Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns. We kind of talked about it already with John Morgan. In the main event, we have Macy Barber versus Alexa Grasso. We've also talked about that. Ian Hynes versus Kelvin Gastelum. These guys are probably between 10 and top 10, top 15 on USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie rankings. But if they want to make their move, and for Kelvin, it means back to, you know, a top five contender, or for Ian Hynes to become a top five contender, this fight is pivotal.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know who to turn in on staff picks, because this could be the fight where maybe you look at Ian Hynes and you go, wow, he just took that next step. Or you could look at Kelvin Gastelum and say, ooh, he might have lost a step. It's that type of fight where one of these guys is going to make a move in one direction. We talked to Ian Hynes, I think, last week or something. And the guy's just full of confidence. He's tough as nails. He trains sometimes here in Vegas as well, so we get to see him from time to time. And he's just a really, really tough out. It's going to be a tough fight. I think it's going to go to decision. But I think these guys are going to carry a very grueling high pace in that fight.
Look, Gastelum, he beat Bisping. He beat Jacare. And then he went the distance with Israel Adesanya. You can't question that this dude isn't one of the top cats. But then he had disappointing losses to Till. And then he had a very disappointing loss to Jack Hermanson. I've always felt like he was playing with house money because he would eventually return to welterweight. But he's proven himself as a great middleweight as well. The only problem is he's on a two-fight skid. And now if he loses to Ian Hynes, I just don't know that he's going to fight for a title in the next 2 years. You know, But you can't deny what the guy's done in the sport. First coming out of the Ultimate Fighter, then doing well as a welterweight, had some trouble making welterweight, moves up to middleweight, and then, like I said, fought with Israel Adesanya for 5 rounds, hurt Israel Adesanya, knocked down Israel Adesanya, didn't win. Not saying that. Israel won the fight, but still, he was there to the very end. He's got the utmost respect from Israel Adesanya. However, you know, you can't just fall back on that fight. Like I say, Darren Till's beating him. Joker Hermanson's beating him. He's got to win this fight. I don't know if he still even entertains the thought of one day becoming a welterweight. I'm reminded of Robbie Lawler, who did so many things as a welterweight, then went to another few leagues and competed well as a middleweight. And then when he came back for his last run, he came back as a welterweight and became a champion. So who knows? We shall see. This fight is very important for both of them. We also got Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. And it's not a loser leave town. I think the UFC loves them both. Especially Bobby's been fighting very often now, and Jim Miller's just fought 30-some fights for the UFC. He always answers the phone. So I don't think it's a career ender in any way. I tweeted something that said almost 30 years of pro fighting experience between the two. But if they want to get back up there with the Dariushes and Fajitas, and those are the guys that are chasing the Felders and the Iaquintas, and those are the guys that are chasing the Fergusons and Gagees, and those are the guys chasing the Oliveras and Poit. You know what I mean? If they want to, like, take that step, the winner, you know, if somebody's got to win this Saturday and do it impressively. The loser's just going to, it's going to take a hit. I don't think it'll be the end for either one, like I say, but I don't know. I don't know what drives them nowadays. Just fighting, competing, cashing checks. Okay, I understand. But title aspirations, you got to win on Saturday.
You got to see Bobby Green's media day yesterday. He answers that the best way he possibly can. He he basically said he doesn't give a you know what about the title, because he just wants to pay off his house. He just wants to stack paper, make sure his friends and family are taken care of. And it's just all about money, money fighting, money, money fighting. And then Jim Miller, he's a pretty honest guy. And I think he's doing something similar. If he can stack a couple wins and maybe get to a title shot, yeah. But in that division, it's just so tough. It is so tough. And in the position that they're in now, it's going to take a while to get up there. But yeah, Bobby Green's thing was pretty funny.
Well, if he can win this fight, he will have won 4 out of 5, and they'll give him somebody that's in a decent position. Maybe not Miller, because Miller's had a long run, and Miller it isn't on the same type of a run that Bobby. Bobby had 1-3 in a row before he lost his last one. But if he can win this next one, he will have won 4 of his last 5, and he's also a little younger than Miller. We'll see. But just win, baby. Like,
yep. Oh, George just disappeared. Yeah, like I think he said, like Al Davis used to say, former owner of the Raiders. That was his thing, and that's what we have to hear from all the annoying Raider fans every weekend. Just win, baby.
Yeah, sorry about that. I clicked the wrong button. Marquez and Patolo, that rounds out the main card. You know, Marquez hasn't fought in almost 3 years.
Yeah. He's had opportunities. It's come close, no, but
I can't believe it's been that long. I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis at Dana White Contender Series in the old, hot, sweaty gym. And I can't believe the Shirico was his last fight, I believe. Mm-hmm. 31 months. I mean, 36 months is 3 years, so 31 months. Yeah, you're right. They were going to fight last year. He was going to fight last year, and he had a COVID incident, either him or the opponent. I can't remember. But I'm happy to see him back. Let's see how he does. But he's a cool guy.
I do want to bring up one thing before we bounce out here. Bellator, finally. Weren't we asking for this? I think on the last show or a couple shows ago, we need something from Bellator to come out and say, hey, we're still around. We're still doing big things. And they had their announcement, and they're going to have another tournament. But the matching, the pairing that they did, Anthony Johnson and Yoel Romero to start off. Is it a mistake? Is it not? I think you can make a case for both sides, but pretty ballsy. And I think that's what Bellator needs to do. They need to be ballsy right now.
Yeah, the perfect scenario would be for those two to make it to the next round at least. You know, Bellator is hoping that they're hoping for a certain Final Four, and they probably have a dream final. I don't know who it is for them, but it usually has to do with who means the biggest business for them, you know? So here are the names: Lyoto Machida, Phil Davis, Corey Anderson, Vadim Nemkov, Yoel Romero, Bader. Anthony Johnson, Ryan Bader. Yeah, and I think I missed somebody. D Yags, I think is what we're calling him. He's got like a long name. I would imagine that for them, if they really believe in Nemkov, their champ, then they probably want him in the finals against Anthony Johnson or Ryan Bader. But Ryan Bader makes it difficult because now you're back in the whole champ thing again. And one of the things that jumped out immediately is, wait a minute, if he's in the 205 brackets, that means what's going on with heavyweight? Heavyweight's been a disappointment the last few years. They had the Grand Prix, but even before that, they had a champion who had a contract dispute. Then that got resolved. Then we did have this. Then we had a title fight that ended in a no contest. It's just been a mess. There's been no continuity to it. But he can't be in two places at one time. So he's at 205. By the way, I wish Musasi would have made it as well, or maybe Liam McGarry, but whatever.
He said he felt he was too small.
Musasi?
Yeah.
Man, he's a former Strikeforce light heavyweight champ. He fought at Pride against heavyweights. He beat Mark Hunt.
That's what he said.
All right. Well, I would say that to answer the question about Romero versus AJ, Scott Coker has a lot of experiences in Grand Prix. I think he'll probably be the first to tell you it hasn't usually worked out the way we wanted to. Featherweight might wind up with McKee versus Pitbull. I don't know that he could ever publicly say it. And that was 16 deep. But Heavyweight didn't. Remember when he had the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix? Fedor got eliminated in round one.
Yeah.
So it worked out. And I think they were gunning for a possible Fedor Verdum rematch. I remember Overeem took out Verdum. It didn't play out. A little gem named Daniel Cormier wound up taking the thing down. But if you fight him early, look, Romero's 43. If you kept them separate and one of them lost, then we miss out on the matchup. So, yeah, I'll take it. I'm greedy. And I'll take it right now.
And Bellator signed Zabit's little brother. Did you see what Eddie Alvarez said about that?
No.
This is from Eddie Alvarez. He says, "You are all in big fucking trouble." And he put like 10 exclamation points on there. So exclamation marks. Kids got a lot of hype. I don't know. Bellator does these types of things. That's what they need, is they need like their own fresh talent. So we'll see how this kid does. But if you get that kind of praise from Eddie Alvarez, I would believe it.
We'll see. And then I guess we got to mention they're going to Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
Showtime's also welcoming boxing back. So good spot for combat sports. I think people got to start loading up on Showtime. They got great original programming. One of my favorite shows is Inside the NFL. So good on Showtime. They've worked with Scott Coker before. That was the home of Strikeforce. And I don't know. I mean, I was happy when they were with CBS Sports, but maybe CBS Sports had other plans, or it's all under Viacom. But I remember them having a nice, cozy home with Showtime, and a lot of people caught their fights on Showtime. So I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I think it'll work out. But they got to make you want to tune in. And they're starting to do that, right? Those are the type of matchups that make you want to tune in, the little storylines. But it's good to see Showtime back in the mix.
Archuleta is fighting, defending his belt against Sergio Pettis. We found that out as well.
Yeah.
All right, first things first, Saturday night, UFC 258. Join us here on Sportscaster. Goz and I will host a watch-along, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. Watch the fights along with us, especially those of you that don't plan on ordering it. Let us be your eyes and ears. We'll duck in a little early, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Tell your friends, please pass on the retweets or do the retweets, and please share the Facebook posts, because we're going to be promoting it here heavily for the next 48 hours. And like Goz said, tomorrow at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific, we'll be here to preview the fights with Simon Head and Dan Tom, two of our esteemed colleagues. And speaking of esteemed colleagues, thanks to John Morgan for hanging out with us the first part of the show as we unpack some of the big news from yesterday. First, what Nate Diaz wants, and of course Gina Carano getting dropped from The Mandalorian, which I think is what most people are talking about. So anyway, we're gonna bounce on out of here. Enjoy your Thursdays, and we'll see you tomorrow, first of all, for that breakdown show, and then Saturday for the watch along. Go out there and be a champion.